JP, stop me if you've heard this story before. I'm at a basketball game a couple nights ago. I run into one of my friends whose team had just been eliminated in the postseason. And they got beat by a team that's from their league that they play twice every year, that they know very well, and that they beat already in the regular season. So I said to my friend, "Well, what happened? Did they do anything differently?" "Oh, no, they didn't do anything differently. They do what they always do. We worked on it in practice for 3 days. We went through everything that they run, and for whatever reason, we just couldn't execute when it really mattered, and we ended up losing the game." Now, a lot of coaches are in a place here in the spring where maybe they're looking back at their season and they're thinking, "That happens to us all the time. The lack of execution, no matter how much time we spend on it in practice, we just can't seem to get it done in games." And what we're going to talk about this week on the podcast is perhaps rather than blaming our players for a lack of focus or a lack of attention to detail, what if there was a way to better structure our environment that would be, number one, more engaging for players, that would increase their focus and their attention to what needs to be done in the game. Number two, that would increase their learning so the things that we teach them or try to teach them on Monday, they remember on Tuesday. And number three, the things that we actually work on in practice, they are able to do in the same way in games. I'm going to share a little bit of our journey down the road to using this games-based approach to our practices and preparation, but this is not a basketball podcast. This is really a discussion about how players learn and how they apply that learning in a competitive environment.
Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin alongside my co-host Nate Sanderson. And every week in 30 minutes or less, we're giving you transformational leadership tools and strategies. This podcast is brought to you by Thrive on Challenge, which provides mentorship for coaches to help them grow as a coach and build their culture. You can learn more at thriveonchallenge.com. You're listening to episode 128, A Games-Based Approach to Learning. So this is an episode I've been dying to do for a long time here, Nate. I get so many calls and have so many conversations with coaches of all sports, and they all really struggle with the challenge that you kind of outlined in our introduction there of just that lack of transfer from practice to games. And I'd say the other thing that they struggle with is that keeping players engaged and focused in the training session. And in today's podcast, you're really going to offer what I really truly believe is one of the best solutions to those two problems there. Now, Nate, I know you've used a games-based approach to your practices for some time. You've actually got a video out there that's a very, very popular video through Breakthrough Basketball on the games-based approach. And you've been speaking at coaching clinics on it as well for some time. But you weren't always that way. You kind of stumbled upon it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that story?
Yeah, JP, when I started my coaching career, you know, I didn't play a lot of organized basketball growing up. I didn't play in high school. I didn't play in college. And so when I started coaching, you know, we really built our practices just from what I saw other coaches doing. We were doing a lot of very traditional drills for our fundamentals. We were doing a lot of conditioning drills. We taught our offense, you know, in 5-on-0. And that's kind of the way that we operated probably for the first 10 years of my career until we kind of had an episode where we faced three significant challenges that all kind of came together at the same time that really started to change the way I thought about how we trained. So the first of those challenges surfaced during a captain's meeting about 8 years ago. I'll never forget this. We're right in the middle of a 500 season, and we just aren't practicing very well. We're kind of in the dog days of January. We've lost a little bit of that edge. We're not giving as much effort as we were earlier in the year. We're not as engaged in the film and the scout. So I bring my captains in and I just ask them, you know, what's going on? And they sort of hemmed and hawed. And finally, one of them said, "You know, coach, nobody's having any fun." And this was news to me because I was having a great time. You know, the things that I loved as a coach was looking at the film over the weekend, breaking our opponents down, figuring out what do we have to do to attack them defensively? What do we have to do to be able to be effective on offense? And then trying to walk through those things to get ready. And I loved that process as part of the game. But our players didn't. They didn't love the process of preparing. And so this sort of stuck in the back of my mind, you know, trying to figure out how do we do things a little bit differently to make it more engaging for players. Now, the second challenge we faced during this time was that during our open gyms and our off-season workouts, we would never have 10 people in the gym at one time. Small school, we're sharing athletes, and oftentimes our workouts, we'd have 4, 5, maybe 6 kids, and we just had to figure out a way to be able to teach our 5-player offensive concepts without being able to go 5-on-5. And this essentially led us into experimenting with a lot of just what we would now call small-sided games to try to break our offense down into some smaller pieces. Now, the third challenge that was really more for me personally as a coach is that in the first 5 years that I was at Springville, we really invested a lot of time in our off-season shooting program. We actually built these workouts that we called Sniper School. We had kids come in and they'd shoot 250 shots. They'd chart everything, and they had to earn their way out as they got farther and farther from the basket. Theoretically, what we were doing is we were putting them on the edge of their range until they were proficient there before we'd allow them to work their way back. And we'd chart everything so we could look at their improvement, we could look at their range, we could look at their shooting effectiveness. And we got really, really good at Sniper School. The problem was we had a kid that went through this program for 4 years. And in Sniper School, she would shoot 54% from threes, thousands of threes. She's making over half of them. We get to her senior year in games, and she shoots 28%. And we think, well, maybe this is just an anomaly, right? It's just this kid for whatever reason. You know, JP, she's not that athletic. She doesn't have that quicker release. It must just be her, right? So we go to the next year. Another kid, been in the program now for 5 years in Sniper School, making 50% of her threes, thousands of threes. She shoots 13% from the three-point line her senior year. And this really made me rethink, are we getting better at the drill, or are we getting better at what happens in the game? The thing that really started to change my thinking about all three of these challenges was the book, The 21st Century Basketball Practice by Brian McCormick. And in the book, it really introduced me to this idea of using a game-based approach that was far different than a lot of the traditional ways that we were approaching practice.
You know, Nate, it's so funny how so much of our story actually relates. I mean, I was going through a similar crisis in my own coaching in Ireland at the time, and I stumbled across Brian McCormick's book, Crossover, and that was absolutely a game changer for me, though I had some early resistance to it. I'd actually been introduced this idea of a games-based approach, whole part whole, these type of things before by some rugby coaches in Ireland, and I kind of brushed it off of like, you're just rolling the ball out there and letting your guys go play. They're just having them compete. And it wasn't really until I understood what a games-based approach was that I actually appreciate it for what it could be as a teaching tool.
So one of the misnomers about using a game-based approach is that it's not just introducing competition into your practice. So for example, again, in basketball, you know, just saying, well, we're going to shoot for 5 minutes. Now let's count our makes, and whoever makes more than the other person is the winner. That doesn't make it games-based. It makes it competitive. But really the term that we started to think about as we're designing here is game-like, right? We want how we practice to be like what happens in a game. And I think too often in my own experience, we were isolating skills outside of the environment that players would experience in a game. Sniper School is a really good example. We took hundreds of thousands of shots that were all standing in the same place, 10 shots in a row, no defense, don't have to move your feet, perfect passes every time. How often does that happen in a game? Never, right? So we were practicing the skill of shooting, but we weren't practicing it in the same way that our players experienced it in a game. And one of the analogies that I often use to try to illustrate why this is important and the difference between just drilling isolated technical skills and putting them in a game-like environment is how we learn to drive. I mean, when I first learned to drive, my grandpa took me to the mall on a Sunday afternoon when it was closed, and we just drove in circles around the mall in an empty parking lot, you know, getting used to the steering wheel and the pedals and looking through the windshield and all those types of things, but not having to worry about traffic and stoplights and pedestrians and bicycles and all the other environmental things that eventually you have to be able to master in order to be able to drive in traffic. We just started with the skills of how to operate the vehicle. But I think too often when I was teaching in practice, how to make a dribble move against a cone, it would be the same as me just driving in the parking lot and then grandpa saying, all right, well, it's snowing a little bit and it's rush hour traffic, but let's go out and drive downtown and see what happens. It's kind of the same thing as taking your players from going against a cone and then throwing them into a game where they're playing in a 5-on-5 situation, right? So as we learn to drive, we gradually go to a residential neighborhood, and then we go to a highway where there's not a lot of traffic, and we sort of progress slowly into more and more complex situations as we're building our ability not only to drive the car physically, moving the steering wheel and the pedals, but also to be able to perceive all the various things that happen in the environment. And the other key to driving that is also key to performance in sport is that you have to be able to make great decisions based on what you're seeing as you're driving or as you're playing.
Yeah, I absolutely love that analogy, and just gets me thinking to, especially my early days of coaching, how much time I just spent in the parking lot with my players and the amount of frustration that I got when I put them into the real game situation. And I really honestly hadn't prepared or equipped them. Now, one of the questions I know many coaches are asking are, okay, I get this, but what is this actually, what does game-like practice look like? What does that look like for you in your situation now?
So JP, when we are building activities or drills or games in practice, again, the key is I'm trying to create a simulation of what actually happens in a game, right? So another analogy, again, is just if you think about a flight simulator, you can use all these different scenarios in a flight simulator. And if you crash into a mountain in the simulator, nobody dies, right? We don't have to buy a new plane. You just start over. Well, it's the same idea in practice. I want to create scenarios and situations that we're going to experience on Tuesday and Friday night in the game, so that if we fail, we can learn from those failures and we just start the drill or the game over. So what is it about those types of games and situations and practice that are different from what we were doing before? Well, the first thing that makes something game-like is the idea of variability, or think about it in terms of unpredictability. If I'm going to do a dribble move against a cone, that cone is not moving. So I can fake left and go right, and I know it's going to work every time because there's nothing changing in the environment for me to be able to finish that layup. But in a game, that's a defender. That's a defender that might try to take one side away. They might come up at me. They might give ground and move backwards, right, to defend the basket. I don't know how they're going to respond to that move. And so by creating more of a live situation, and honestly, one of the easiest ways to do this, I don't care what your sport is to just add defense to your fundamental skill development, is to create an unpredictable, variable environment, right? Rather than a scripted move. Now, the second thing that goes into this is that you have to incorporate perception. They have to be able to see in order to make good decisions, right? So in basketball, I hear coaches sometimes complain that their players don't make layups in games, right? They don't finish around the rim. We make 90% of our layups in practice and we shoot 40% in games. So my first question for those coaches is, what is the situation that your players are missing layups? Is it in half-court offense? Is it in full-court offense? Is it in one-on-one situations? Is it cutting to the basket? Is it posting up? We want to try to figure out the game context and then work backwards to recreate that in practice, right? So let's take an example. Let's say that it's in transition. We steal the ball, we throw it ahead, and we just don't finish well one-on-one. Well, maybe part of the problem is not necessarily the technical ability of making the layup. It's perceiving, it's being able to see where is the defense and what are they trying to do. So if the defender's in front of me, I'm going to have to use a different move than if the defender is next to me. Or if the defender is trailing me, I'm going to use a totally different finishing move. But for me to make that decision in terms of what technical move is most appropriate, I have to be able to see the environment, see the defense, and then make a decision from there. Too often, again, think about shooting. In sniper school, we just caught it and we shot it, right? But in a game, a shot is a decision. It's a decision not to pass it. It's a decision not to dribble it. And that decision is based on where is the defense. But we never trained the decision with the shot. We only trained the shot, right? And so in a game-like environment, it's more complex than just catch and shoot. We just never trained those things together. Now, the third piece of this, again, that makes it more game-like, there's a vocabulary term that you'll find if you read a lot about this game-based approach, which is interleaving. And the idea is really simple. In the game of basketball, soccer, football, whatever, skills are not isolated into single pieces. So, for example, in basketball, I don't just stand in isolation by myself and make a pass or a catch, right? My passing or my catch is probably a better example, is immediately tied to my dribble or my shot. How I catch the ball is going to affect the way that I can shoot the ball. How I dribble into traffic and pick the ball up is going to affect my ability to make the next pass, right? Those skills are tied together. And again, too often we drilled passing in isolation, shooting in isolation, catching in isolation, without any kind of variability, without any kind of perception and decision making involved, and without tying those skills together as they would have to be used in a game. So when we start to build our training experience, we're trying to incorporate all three of those things into the game-like scenarios that we create in our practices.
Yeah, Nate, and those three principles, applying them, they're so important for our team. I remember a few years back when I started to really play around with this and work with this, I actually was very delayed in using a games-based approach when it came to shooting. And I had a few players that were really experiencing a lot of frustration. They were getting up reps. They were staying late after practice. They were shooting up 500 shots, right? And they still weren't getting any better. And I was trying to sit there and, you know, help them to make technical adjustments on their fall through or their feet. But the bottom line was we were asking them to shoot shots in the game that we weren't practicing with them in practice, or they weren't working on after practice. And when I started taking our practice time and saying, instead of trying to focus on, I want every guy to shoot 250 shots, and started focusing on how can I create 25 to 50 reps that are going to feel really, really close to game-like and really, really prepare them, their numbers went through the roof, and their improvement and their engagement and just the whole process, they started to buy into what I was trying to teach them and the adjustments I was trying to help them with. So this stuff is really, really important that we're able to apply these principles.
JP, there's a great story in the book called The Art of a Beautiful Game about Steve Kerr and how he trained in a more game-like scenario when he went to the Spurs at the end of his career. Again, another guy that shot almost 50% from three for his career, but really struggled in San Antonio because he was coming in and playing like 6, 8, maybe 10 minutes. And his job was just come in, play three offensive possessions, make one or two threes, and get out of there. So Chip Ellengard, who was the shooting coach for the Spurs, they would do the kind of traditional approach. Hey, let's go get 1,000 shots. Let's watch the ball go in the basket. You know, let's build our confidence. And it just wasn't working. He couldn't get out of this shooting slump. So they decided, let's sit down and train exactly the same way, or train the exact same experience that you get in the game. So he brought Steve in one morning. He sat him down on the bench. They put some chairs up. Chip sits next to him and just starts talking to him. They just start BSing about, you know, his day and his kids. And then Ellengard stands up and he yells, "Kerr, get in the game." And he made him run down to check into the scorer's table and went in, and he ran up and down the floor 6 times. And every time he went to the offensive end, he ran 3 sort of patterns that he runs to get his shots. He took 3 shots, hit one, go to the other end, come back, run another pattern, shoot it, go to the other end, come back. And then Ellengard yelled, "Kerr, get out, you're out." Goes back to the bench. They sit down and they talk for 5 minutes. And Ellengard jumps up and he says, "Kerr, you're in." And so they would do this, and they would shoot 50 shots, 3 or 4 at a time, with 5-minute intervals, because that's exactly what it was like for him shooting in games. And lo and behold, after that, he ends up shooting 48.5% for the Spurs over his 2 years there, because he trained for exactly what he experienced in games.
Yeah, I absolutely love that story of Steve Kerr. But for most of us as coaches, that's not what our practices are going to look like. We're going to have kids sitting down for the 2 hours. So tell us a little bit about what your practice is, or what are some of the skills and how you trained them, what it used to look like, and now what it looks like for you.
Sure. Well, I'll give you 2 examples. So let's take an individual skill. Okay. In basketball, let's use passing as an example. My first 10 years in my career to get better at passing, we would do a lot of column passing. So We'd warm up by doing stationary passes, me and my partner, 12 to 15 feet away. Let's do right-hand push pass, left-hand push pass, chest pass, overhead pass. And every 20 or 30 seconds, we'd blow the whistle. And we'd literally just play catch, working on the physical element of throwing these passes. Now, these are high school kids who know how to throw the passes, right? When we turn it over, it's not because we can't throw the pass. It's because we can't throw the pass when there's defense, right? So how we do things differently now, and one of the important things that coaches have to understand is the artistry of a game-based approach is the ability to manipulate constraints, okay? Or the idea that we're going to create a game. Let's make 3-on-3, but we're going to change the rules of the game to try to isolate or emphasize a specific skill. So a simple way to do that would be to play half-court 3-on-3 with no dribble. So players have to move without the ball. They have to pass and catch, but they're not allowed to dribble, right? So we take that one skill. Now it's defended. Our catches are defended, right? Our movement prior to and our perception, we got to see where defense is. And all those things we talked about before are now important elements of the game. We're going to throw a lot of passes because we're doing it in 3-on-3. So our volume is going to be greater than if we were in 5-on-5. And obviously it's more game-like because it's defended, right? So that might be a way that we use an individual skill. Now, just to build on that, if we wanted to think about that concept of interleaving and say, well, wait a minute, Nate, that when you throw passes, remember before you said how you catch a pass affects what you do with the ball next. And right now you're saying all I can do is catch it and either pass it or shoot it again. But in a real game, we get to dribble. So we might change a rule or change a constraint to the game to add a dribble, but to do it in a restricted way. So for example, we would play a game called dribble plus one, okay? So we play 3-on-3, nobody can dribble until somebody dribbles the ball. And if you dribble, it starts this plus one rule. So I throw it to JP, JP puts it on the floor, he drives to the basket. Either you have to shoot it or you get plus one, you get one more pass, and whoever you throw it to, they have to shoot it. So now we're limiting, not everyone can dribble, we can't just bounce it forever, because we're still trying to get better at passing and catching, but we've sort of slow played another skill into the game because we know dribbling and attacking and decision making at the rim, those are all also important skills that are tied to passing and catching. Now, another thing that we do differently is we never play 5-on-0. We never teach offense 5-on-0. We never put plays in 5-on-0 because over the course of my career, I look back at this now and I think, look, we put in a motion offense 5-on-0 with no defense. We'd say, listen, you pass the ball and then you have options. You can cut to the basket. You can ball screen. You can screen away. My player would say, well, coach, how do I know what to do? And I would say, well, it just depends on what the defense is doing. Just do something now so we can keep the offense running. So I'm telling them your decision is dependent on what you see the defense doing, but I'm not putting any defenders on the floor for them to see to actually make a decision the way that they would in a game. That's foolishness, right? And so now when we teach a baseline out of bounds play, even the very first time we're going to teach it, we at least put token defenders in. We might move them around like chess pieces and they might not be live, but at least we're seeing all 10 bodies on the floor from the beginning. And honestly, one of the best compliments, and this is going to sound a little bit strange, that I've maybe ever gotten in coaching. My first year at Linmar, we put in a whole new offense. You know, everything is different. And we're putting it in 5-on-5, right? And we get to the, I don't know, into January, and one of the players asked, coach, can we just walk through this without defense? So we take the defense off, and we start the offensive possession. And my players look at me, and they're like, well, we don't know what to do. I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, well, everything we've done so far is in response to the defense, and we don't have any defense. So we don't even know how to do this, right, or how to run what we were running. And I thought, this is it. You know, we have arrived. This is exactly the point that we wanted to get to, because practicing without defense is so different than what happens in a game. Our players couldn't even function without the game-like aspect of having defense on the floor as they were learning. So if coaches are wondering, where do I start with this? There are three easy variables. And again, I don't care if you're coaching basketball, football, soccer, hockey, whatever. These three variables create a more game-like experience. One, change the amount of space that players are playing in. The smaller the space, the more difficult it is for your offense. You're playing 3-on-3 inside the 3-point line. They got to be more precise. They got to be quicker to shoot it. They got to be stronger with the ball because the defense doesn't have to guard as much area. The second thing, change the number of defenders. If your players are struggling to be able to score in 3-on-3, give them the opportunity to play in 3-on-2. Maybe that allows them a little more space and a little more time and a little more opportunity for the offense to be able to practice their skills. Then you go back to 3-on-3. And then maybe you make it a little more difficult and play some 3-on-4. But changing the number of players adds all kinds of different variables. And finally, just changing time, giving players 5 seconds to score. They can do whatever they want, but they only get 5 seconds. Or giving the offense 15 seconds to score so many points, however you would do it. Time constraints add pressure, right? And it creates all kinds of different experiences in a game-like context.
Nate, it's kind of cool because I had a college basketball coach that really committed to this games-based approach towards his practices from 2 years ago when I was working with him and to this year. And his players definitely have benefited from the execution side. He would absolutely 100% agree with it. But if you ask the players what their experience was like from 2 years ago in practice to this year, they say it's night and day. The feedback on these forums has just been incredible when we're just kind of just taking the pulse on the team. They're loving practice. They're enjoying the games-based approach more. And they haven't experienced the same drop-off in that engagement or in practice as the season goes on. And I think that's a real, real testament to their belief in its effectiveness, but also just the process and the drills just become a lot more fun because we're actually challenging and stretching the players rather than doing the same old thing over and over and over again.
JP, we are looking forward to our next coaching culture workshop in the Chicago area on April 5th. And that is for coaches in all sports looking to build and strengthen their program culture. We're also excited on Saturday, April 4th, to add a Thrive On Challenge basketball coaching clinic. Mark Cassio is going to be with us for half a day teaching his innovative offensive techniques. And I'm going to spend half a day working in the gym with basketball coaches on how to implement this game-based approach into their practices.
Yep, and to register for that workshop, you should go to thriveonchallenge.com/public-workshop, or you can check out the link in the episode details. We have an early bird registration rate of $125 a coach or $500 for an entire coaching staff. That's for the day. We got a special 2-day rate. Also, on the Saturday night, we are having a Final Four watch party for coaches that are in the area that just going to want to come and hang out with myself and Nate and Mark to watch some college basketball in the March Madness. So be sure to go to thriveonchallenge.com and register today.